A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the Outlier Podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Conlon. Happy Monday. I hope everyone had a phenomenal weekend. It's Monday, April 22nd, 2024, and I am thrilled to announce that I have hired a researcher and writer. Her name is Celine Carrick, and she was really able to help me out with this episode. So this is the first episode that Celine has worked on, and I'm just so excited to have someone like her on board. So I'm going to throw her socials in the episode notes as well. So big shout out to Celine. Go follow her. Okay, today I am finding myself back in Tennessee. This is the state that I cannot seem to escape. I have discussed Tennessee cases like Grant Solomon, Sebastian Rogers, and briefly Riley Strain, to name a few, on this show. But today we are going to get into a 20-year missing persons case, Jennifer and Adriana Wicks. Now, on the actual 20-year anniversary of the disappearance of Jennifer and Adriana, which was last month, March of 2024, it had been 20 years, I was emailed by Jennifer's sister, Casey Robinson, and she had asked me to do some investigating and possibly find out some new information when it came to this heartbreaking case. And I said, yes. I mean, at the time I was on vacation with my family for my kids' spring break, but I was like, when I get back, I will absolutely look into this and raise awareness and just let everyone know that this is not a cold case. There are new detectives on this case as of March of 2024. So people out there, they can still help. And I just really feel for Jennifer's family because I cannot imagine how frustrating it's been, even with recognition from Dateline and numerous news reports over the years. There really hasn't been an update or any new evidence or DNA found as to what happened to their two loved ones. So I want to take you through a timeline of important events and some major twists and contradictions throughout the years, ultimately bringing light to this tragic story. Let's take it back to July of 2003. I was actually a high school senior, or I had just finished my senior year, and we are here in Robertson County, Tennessee. Jennifer Wicks is 21 years old at the time, and her baby, Adriana, was almost two. Adriana's dad was out of the picture, and Jennifer was in between jobs and had been living with her aunt, Lisa Fierro, after Jennifer's mom, Kathy, took a job opportunity in Vegas. So Jennifer, she didn't have a car, she didn't have a job, and she actually didn't have her own bank account. She was very heavily reliant on her family and friends to help her, drive her places, etc. And in 2003, it wasn't totally uncommon for people not to have cell phones. So just keep all that in mind as I go through the story. So Jennifer was introduced to a young man in his mid-20s by the name of Joey Benton by her cousin Jeffrey Grayson, or Lisa's son. The two, Jennifer and Joey, were so romantic at first, young and in love, and obviously in the summer, everything is just way more romantic. But after a few short months of dating, Joey really seemed to show his true colors, and he was a bit of a wild card. He was violent. I mean, his family had a violent past, a criminal history, specifically his father, and he was a steelworker for a commercial construction company working for his dad's friend. And Jennifer starts to notice his behavior get a bit erratic sometimes, or he loses his temper very easily, and she spends most of her time at the Benton household, which is very dysfunctional. Joey lives with his mom and his dad. So in the fall of 2003, just a few months after Jennifer and Joey start dating, Jennifer, in a fit of tears, calls her mother from her grandmother's house, and she says Joey pulled a gun and threatened to hurt himself, me, and Adriana. And she actually goes as far as to tell her mother, Kathy, who, remember, is living in Vegas at this point, that Joey put the gun in Jennifer's mouth. And Joey's mother, Cindy Benton, she actually drove Jennifer and Adriana to her grandmother's house, which is where she made this distraught call. So I'm thinking in my head, okay, Cindy Benton is starting to notice some of these behavior patterns between the two. And obviously, she's most certainly going to take her son's side from what we know about her, but we'll get to her later. So Kathy realizes, okay, Jennifer is clearly in an unsafe situation and she needs her mom. So Kathy left her job in Vegas and moved back to Tennessee. And when she moved back to Tennessee, Jennifer and Adriana moved into her finished basement. And at the time, Joey and Jennifer were broken up. But they did the whole break up, get back together. And of course, Jennifer's family was completely against this relationship, knowing what they knew about Joey and how violent he could get. So Joey was not allowed at Kathy's home. On December 21st, 2003, there was a big incident that occurred at Kathy's house. So Jennifer and Joey were spending more and more time together, again, much to the dismay of her family and her friends. And one evening, Jennifer and Joey were returning to Kathy's house to pick up Adriana, who Kathy had been watching, and a bunch of their stuff to take back to the Bentons because it seemed as though Jennifer was ready to move in. But just to give you an idea of the Benton home, I had mentioned he lives with his mom and his dad, and they live in the house, but Joey Benton lived in a barn, and this was next to the house, and it was referred to as the party barn because he was constantly throwing parties, and there was literally no running water or heat in that barn. So it just didn't seem to Jennifer's family that it was a great place for Jennifer or her baby to live. So Jennifer, at this point, is not on great terms with her mother or her sisters, and Joey was not allowed near Kathy's home because of what I'm about to tell you. So, I love to digress, don't I? But okay, back to December 21st, 2003. Jennifer Wicks ended up filing a complaint, a police complaint, against her mom and sister that night. So Jennifer claims that she and Joey, when they got to the home, after about 45 minutes, her mom locked the door when Joey happened to not be in the same room with them, and Adriana wasn't either, to my knowledge. And Kathy basically said, look, you're not leaving this house with him. We don't like him. We don't want you guys together. And then Jennifer alleges that they tried to restrain her on the couch, her mom and sister, and they just ended up hitting her over and over and over again. And it's my understanding that this is her sister Heather, not her sister Casey, who contacted me. So Jennifer alleges, again, they try to restrain her, and Joey hears them from the other room, and he sees that the door is locked, and he comes and he kicks the door down, scaring everyone. Everyone's screaming, and then Joey, Jennifer, and Adriana leave, and that is when it is decided Joey is never allowed at Kathy's home, and clearly the relationship between Jennifer and her mother is now strained for the time being. So, as I mentioned, it was December, we have Christmas, then New Year's, and then Adriana's second birthday. And all of these things were celebrated with the Benton family, as that's where Jennifer was living. But I mentioned they were living in a barn, and the barn was starting to get frigid and unlivable even. So shortly after ringing in the 2004 New Year's, they moved into the Bentons' cottage-style house. So Jennifer and Joey shared a room while Adriana had her own room. And over time, Jennifer and Kathy, they began to reconcile their relationship and talking again. And Joey was still banned from being anywhere near Kathy's residence. And it's so crazy. Kathy was very adamant about this, and I don't really blame her. But when Jennifer would bring Adriana to visit Kathy, Joey would drive them and just park on the side of the road and wait. So during this time, about January and February of 2004, Jennifer's family tried to keep their cool. Obviously, they didn't want another police incident or police report to happen again. But they had an intervention with her. They said, look, and they did all of this very, very gently. They said, you guys are not living in a great spot, you and Adriana. I mean, the Benton home, it was known, it was filled with dozens of firearms. This family had weapons. There was immense family tension, and drinking and drugs were always around these bonfire and barn parties. And you know, being so young, it would make sense that Joey wants to party a lot, but a baby should not be around this type of behavior. And they really wanted her to come back home, but she was just so hesitant to be away from Joey. And again, I had mentioned that his father had a past criminal record, and he does. I mean, we're talking aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a drug possession, drug paraphernalia possession, and I'm not even getting to the worst of it. So let's go to the month of her disappearance, Jennifer's disappearance, which was March of 2004. So Jennifer and her mother's relationship had very much blossomed at this point from January to March. So December was the incident with the police report. They didn't talk for a while, and then things began to get better. So now they're talking just about every day. So on Monday, March 22nd, Kathy had received a call with Jennifer just frantic on the phone. So Adriana wouldn't stop screaming and crying and kept telling her in this baby toddler language that she couldn't pee. It hurt to pee. So when she told the Benton family about the situation, because, you know, she was living with them, she needed to use their car, she needed to use their phone to make any type of appointment or to get to an appointment, they blew her off and they said, oh yeah, it's just diaper rash. Like, she's just crying about diaper rash, Adriana. And they wouldn't help her or drive her to the hospital. So her mom offered to drive them to the Northwest ER, but Jennifer was just nervous that the Bentons wouldn't like Kathy even stepping on their property because of the way that Kathy had treated Joey in the past. So Jennifer's aunt, Lisa, volunteered to pick them up instead. So at the ER, it turns out that Adriana had an infection that they even thought to be an STD, but it was actually called vaginitis. And this is not common in young children or toddlers. It's a bacteria infection, and it's mainly in sexually active women. But Jennifer wanted a second opinion. She called Adriana's pediatrician, and the pediatrician said the infection could just be from wearing a wet diaper for too long. To this day, Jennifer's mom and her aunt believe that Adriana may have been sexually abused. and I want to point something out. I am skipping ahead, and this is not necessarily an accusation, of course, but the Benton family seemed to dismiss the severity of this rash. They did not seem to want to deal with it. But let's fast forward to March of 2024. Joe Benton Sr., Joey's dad, he is in prison after a March 2024 raid of their property. And people following the case, they had likely assumed that when this raid was going on, because it made the news, that it had something to do with Jennifer and Adriana's disappearance. But law enforcement received some kind of tip about illegal weapons, and they found much more. Joe Benton Sr. was indicted on, quote, unlawfully, feloniously, intentionally, and knowingly having material that included a minor engaging in sexual activity, end quote. So he was indicted and arrested on exploitation of a minor. The material was a 20-year-old photo of a family member, and the documents say that he received the sexual exploitation indictment on March 27th, 2024. And I was like, wait, what? Could Joe Sr. have molested Adriana? Could it have been Adriana in that photo? I mean, 20 years. We just don't know. It's an ongoing investigation and nothing has been released to the public. Or could it have been Joe Jr. that potentially molested Adriana? Maybe if Joe Jr. or Joey was abused as a kid, he picked up on this behavior. I mean, it's been stated that that happens to victims or survivors of abuse sometimes. They have a very, very convoluted perception of what love is. And this could be way off base. Again, I'm speculating, but it's just something to think about here. Okay, where were we as I digress? Let's go back in time again. Let's go to March 23rd, 2004, after Jennifer took Adriana to the ER and then called the pediatrician. She asks her mom to meet her and Joey at Dollar General so that her mom, Kathy, could give her a homemade tub or jar of what they called butt butter. And butt butter is a homemade ointment that Kathy used on the girls to get rid of diaper rash, and she was hoping that this would help soothe Adriana's tush. But Kathy also noticed that although, you know, she could hear a lot of Adriana crying in the background during this call, she heard a lot of Joey also appearing to bitch at Jennifer, saying that she was using too many minutes on his cell phone, and then Jennifer snapped back with something like, okay, well, you party all the time, you have a problem. And when Kathy was able to finally give Jennifer this butt butter, the cream for Adriana, she was just heartbroken because she could see that this two-year-old was not feeling well. And that just breaks my heart. So what Kathy didn't know was that those were the final moments. That was the last time she'd ever see her granddaughter and her daughter. And as a side note, I don't have medical records for Adriana. I am very curious as to what this child went through, but hopefully more on that if we do a part two. Okay, let's go to the next day, the day after the butt butter. So it's March 24th, 2004. And Kathy receives a call from Jennifer from her bedroom, and Kathy can just hear, yelling in the background. She heard Cindy, Joey's mother, yelling, and Jennifer says, oh yeah, sorry, she's still being all crazy because we got in a fight over Cindy attacking Jennifer on her parenting skills and also stating that Joey should not be given fatherly duties for Adriana because he's not even Adriana's father. So overall, Jennifer also shared with her mom that she thought Cindy and her son Joey had a really weird relationship, and sometimes it felt like Cindy was almost jealous of Jennifer. I guess Jennifer and Joey were trying to sleep train Adriana, and Cindy was just horrified and didn't like the fact that Joey would sometimes go into Adriana's room alone. So Kathy's like, wait, what? This is very, very concerning. And Jennifer also stated more than once that Cindy made her nervous. And look, we've all had our experiences with our boyfriend's mothers or maybe even our mother-in-laws where we believe they have some weird relationship with their son. So I don't think that this is totally out of the ordinary. However, a few things are just weird. I mean, Cindy being jealous of Jennifer, number one, that's weird. And number two, why didn't she want Joey alone in Adriana's room? Was she afraid he was going to do something? Had she caught him doing something earlier? I don't know. So Kathy just doesn't like everything she's hearing that Jennifer is saying. And Kathy says, okay, I would really like to pick you guys up, bring you home, have you stay here for a while. And Jennifer says, no, no, I'm an adult. I have the situation handled. I will call you tomorrow. And unfortunately, Kathy never received that call. So here we have Thursday, the next day, March 25th. Jennifer and Adriana were at the Benton home while Joey was at work in Franklin, Kentucky, and Cindy was allegedly working an hour away from the house in Sumner County. Sumner County, I know that all you Tennesseans know Sumner County because that is where Grant Solomon tragically passed away, and also it's where Sebastian Rogers disappeared. So Sumner County, I've talked about this. They seem to have a DA who investigates things that he wants to investigate, and when it doesn't support him or his narrative, he seems to just kind of look the other way or wash his hands of it. So I thought that was an interesting piece of information. Joe Benton Sr., his alibi was that he was at an oncologist appointment. But the only thing that has really been confirmed that I know was that Joey was at work. So it seemed as though Jennifer and baby Adriana were alone. But Jennifer had spoken to two family members that day on the phone, one of which was her father, Michael Wicks, at 11 a.m., and he lived in Manchester, Tennessee. So she specifically mentioned to him that she was scared of Cindy Benton. And Michael at this point is like, okay, enough of this. I'm going to have your grandma come and get you. And again, Jennifer says, no, I don't want to. I'm an adult. And plus, Joey's coming home and we're going to go on a picnic when he gets back from work.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
So Michael Wicks later stated that he heard a woman's voice in the background when he was talking to his daughter around 11 a.m. And Jennifer said something to her like, no, no, I'm talking to my dad on the phone. So maybe Jennifer and Adriana weren't alone. Now on the job, it was reported that Joey seemed a little bit sporadic and erratic, and he told his coworker and best friend, Jeffrey, who, as you know, is Jennifer's cousin, the one who introduced them to each other, that he has to leave early after getting a random phone call. And no one knows who called him, and he doesn't share it with Jeffrey. And it seems like Jeffrey doesn't care enough at the time because he doesn't ask questions. He just drives him home. And I know me, I would ask a lot of questions. Wait, that's random. Who called you? Why are we leaving? I mean, Jeffrey doesn't seem to be like that. So we'll just leave that there for now. So when Joey gets home, and this is his account, Jennifer has locked herself in their bedroom with Adriana. Now, for what reason, I don't know. Joey claims they are having an argument. But what's interesting here is that at one point during the argument, Jennifer says, "I want to move back into the barn." What? That seems really, really odd because she just had her mother offer to come and pick her up and have her live with them. And the living conditions in the barn we've established are absolutely horrible. So if, let's say, this was true, man, I mean, we'd have to assume that she was scared of something or someone in that house, but she didn't want to make it obvious, which is why she would ask to move to the barn. I mean, and that's if we're actually buying Joey Benton's story. I'm not saying we are. I'm just saying if that were true, maybe Jennifer had this whole plan worked out in her head and she didn't want to worry her parents. So from here on out, we really only know Joey's account of this specific situation after this alleged argument on March 25th. So Joey claims after this argument, they broke up. They just broke up, and she wanted Joey to take her to Food Value, a grocery store in Cross Plains, to make a call. Now, can you imagine, by the way, you're yelling at somebody who, you know, has weapons, has guns, and has a horrible temper. You break up and you're like, "Hey, can you bring me here?" And he's just like, "Yeah, no problem." Okay, cool. So after Jennifer makes this call at Food Value, she then asks Joey to take her to an Exxon gas station, where after he drove to a church parking lot to ensure that they were picked up safely. And according to Joey, a four-door white Mustang pulled up and Jennifer and Adriana got into the car. He said that he left right after and arrived back at his house by 10 p.m. Joey also claimed that Jennifer was intoxicated and her family was a bit confused when they later heard this because Jennifer wasn't one to get drunk, especially when she was taking care of her kid. And that's just the start of some of these head scratchers. So we and the family, and I say we like journalists, we don't have access to full police reports about this case and Joey's statement. And it's because this case, as I mentioned, is considered to be an open investigation. And this is what police had told Jennifer's family initially. And that is why we know it. So technically, Joey was the last one to see Jennifer and Adriana before they disappeared. And this is according to him. So according to him, he was the last one with them. He saw them get in this white four-door Mustang. They drove off, and then Joey alleges that they stopped by the next day to the Benton house. But I will get to that. But first, let's go through some of these red flags in Joey's claims. So Jennifer's aunt Lisa Fierro, she had called Food Value after hearing Joey's account of what happened, and she spoke with the manager, and the manager stated that he was working that night, and there were two phones in the store, and not one person came in and used either phone the entire night. And when a deputy questioned the cashier that was working the night Jennifer was said to have come in and used the phone, she said that the store locks its doors at 9 o'clock every night. And when she left after her shift, she remembered some Cokes that she'd forgotten in the store, so she went back to get them. And throughout her back and forth, she did not remember ever seeing anyone else in the parking lot. And I don't have that exact timeline. I am working on getting that, but that is very, very weird. And something else that's weird, the whole white Mustang thing. Apparently, that model doesn't exist, a four-door white Mustang. And Joey should know this. He loves cars, and he allegedly owned two Mustangs. His father had confirmed that when Joey was asked to clarify this by a deputy, he went back on his story and said, "Oh, I misspoke. It was a white four-door car. It wasn't a Mustang. I definitely misspoke." How convenient. Now this puts us at Friday, March 26th. No one had spoken to Jennifer, to my knowledge, since the night before. And that's not weird. I mean, I don't talk to my parents every day. We do send a lot of texts on a family thread. But again, phones were very rare back in 2003. And clearly now it's weird if you don't have a phone. No one had spoken to Jennifer for the last few hours or even possibly the night before. So at this point, Joey and Cindy were both at work and Joe Benton was at some court appearance. As you know, I said he was not exactly a stand-up guy, but it was noted that Joey finished up early at work that day and he asked a friend and his friend's girlfriend for a ride home, and he was acting so weird in fact, that his friend's girlfriend actually stated later to police that she was terrified of him and she wanted him out of the car immediately because he was acting so weird. I really wish I was a fly on the wall and I had details as to what he was doing or what he was possibly saying that was making him act so weird. But again, hopefully when I get to a part two, I can find out more. So Joey said that when he returned home, Jennifer and Adriana, they show up in this same white car. And Jennifer wants to pick up some belongings and also ask for the tax refund money that she had deposited in the Benton's bank account. I mentioned that Jennifer didn't have her own bank account, and it would appear that Joey didn't have his own either because he says something like, oh, my parents aren't home, so I can't access it. So Jennifer says, okay, no problem. I will come over tomorrow to get the money. So that night, Joey throws a party with two other couples, and one of the people in attendance is Jeffrey, Jennifer's cousin and Joey's friend. And when Jeffrey asks Joey where Jennifer is, Joey says, oh, she's at a friend's house. And he later, Joey, leaves a message to Aunt Lisa Fierro to inform her that he has Jennifer's $500 and it's ready to be picked up, but he can't get a hold of Jennifer. And later, Joey and his father show up to Lisa's house to give her the money and tell the family about what had happened with this white car. I want to pause for a minute on a couple things. I mean, it doesn't sound too out of the ordinary for Joey to say, oh, she's at a friend's house, but he doesn't actually know who these people are in the white car. So I'm confused as to why he would just kind of brush things off and say, oh yeah, I don't know, she's at a friend's house. Also, I'm interested to know, did they leave this $500 with Aunt Lisa, or did they take it home with them? Because it seems to me that Joe and Joey, they wouldn't drive together and say, here's $500 that you are owed. That seems really weird, right? It's kind of like, okay, Joey will just, you know, take the car and drive over there and drop off the money. It just seems strange they would go together and try to be these stand-up guys unless they were hiding something. Okay, so when Kathy got off work on Friday, and Friday again is March 26th, she tried calling Jennifer. And then she tried calling other people, and nobody was answering. Literally, Jennifer wasn't. None of her daughters were. No one was. So her middle daughter, Heather, is actually finally reachable and says, hey, I got a hold of Joey. And Joey told me everything about the night before with the white car. And he thinks the people in the car are her friends. And Heather says, well, who are these friends? And Joey says, I think they're Jerry and Helga Jackson. So after Heather tells this to Kathy, Kathy reaches out to Jerry and Helga Jackson on Saturday morning and says, hey, have you seen Jennifer? We were told that she's with you and Adriana as well. And then Jerry and Helga Jackson say, wow, something is very wrong if that's what he told you. We haven't seen her specifically since November of 2003. So Kathy is panicked. She reports Jennifer and baby Adriana missing to the Robertson County Sheriff's Department. And when the officer shows up
on the Bentons' doorstep to do a walkthrough of the house, the Bentons say you can't come in without a warrant. So to get this warrant, it took 4 whole days. So if there was foul play involved, as the officers and others suspected, I believe this would absolutely give the perpetrators enough time to dispose of any evidence, come up with a story, and so on. And again, I have not gotten as far as to see who were the responding officers and who the judge was that had to sign off on this warrant, why it would take 4 days. That just seems absolutely crazy, but again, I don't know every single detail. So while the case technically started off as a missing persons case, in actuality, 10 years later, according to the Robertson County Sheriff's Office, it was reclassified in 2013 as a homicide. And they stated, no one, including Joey Benton, has been eliminated as having potential involvement in the disappearance of Jennifer and Adriana Wicks. And according to Officer David L. Gray, he stated he highly suspected that they were murdered. Kathy had been very concerned about Jennifer raising her own child in a place that was filled with firearms and violence and partying. But Officer Gray stated that he was under the impression when they searched the home 4 days after Jennifer and Adriana went missing that there were no weapons in the home during this search. And I was like, are you serious? Okay, it's been 4 days since they had the alert that police were going to come and search the house. Of course, they conveniently hid these weapons. And obviously that's speculation, but come on. I mean, according to family and friends, Joey had once even told Jennifer that he could kill her and Adriana and no one would ever find them. In the months that followed Jennifer and Adriana's disappearance, the Benton property had been searched on 4 separate occasions, and they even had a pond on the property drained and searched. And that reminds me of the Sebastian Rogers case. But a little over a year ago, it was revealed and announced that a new detective had been assigned to Jennifer and Adriana's case. Jennifer's sister, Casey Robinson, stated, "After 19 years as a mother, you lose a little bit of faith in not just the people who are working on it for you, but the faith and the hope that you will ever get answers. So for my mother to sit beside me the other day and see the spark and their eyes light up like that, that was huge." So let's get back to the somewhat present day. The day after Casey Robinson, Jennifer's sister, reached out to me to cover the case, there was a huge search that made the news of the Bentons' home. And the search warrant, as I mentioned, it had nothing to do with Jennifer and Adriana, but it had to do with Joe Benton Sr. and his exploitation of a minor. And he's arrested, he is in jail right now, and it's so crazy because all of this seemed to be happening at once, his arrest and the new detective, and yeah, so it seemed like progress was being made, but in actuality, I don't necessarily think it was, unless you look at the picture that I mentioned that was 20 years old of a minor, and maybe, just maybe, that is Adriana. But I guess we will see. I mean, there's some threads on Reddit, and they're kind of silly, to be honest, but people are saying, oh, well, there's a lack of urgency in this case because officers and townspeople were protecting the Bentons. And I'm like, I just don't see that being the case because Joe Benton Sr. was arrested and jailed multiple times. Nobody was protecting him then. Why would they protect him over this? I feel like that theory is a little bit far-fetched. But I want to point out that when Kathy called the Robertson County Sheriff's Office on March 27th, 2004, after it had been 1 to 2 days and no one could get a hold of Jennifer and no one had seen her or Adriana, Kathy was upset because the sheriff's office did not get the girl's picture on the 10 o'clock news. She felt like they weren't insistent on finding them. And the deputy had assured her that everything was being done that they could possibly do. This seemed to start the narrative that the police had no urgency in the investigation, but I don't know enough to comment on that just yet. So Sheriff Bill Holtz, on the 10-year anniversary of their disappearance, and I hate using the word anniversary for something that's not happy. I guess the 10-year mark is probably better to say. Sheriff Holt strongly believes that some in the community know what happened to Jennifer and Adriana, but have been reluctant to come forward for one reason or another, and he encouraged those in town to help provide answers to give closure to the family. I really don't think that's a helpful quote at all. Oh, you're scared to come forward. Yeah, we'll just come forward and help the family. Cool. I don't think that's helpful. I would say we can protect you. If you have answers, don't be afraid. We will make sure nothing happens to you. Yeah, I mean, I do believe that somebody knows something. And if we can get our hands on some updated police reports, perhaps detailing interviews of Cindy Benton, Joe Benton, etc., I think we'd have a lot more to go on. And the Bentons in the past had provided a theory that baby Adriana was sexually abused by someone that Jennifer knew, and Jennifer let it happen. So Jennifer was scared that she was going to have Adriana taken away, and so she ran off on her own. And her family, they just debunked that so quickly. They were like, okay, well, she was owed $500 from Joey. She didn't have a phone or a job or a car. I mean, come on. Where was she running away to without these resources? And by the way, where was this picnic? Which car were they taking to the picnic? Joey allegedly didn't have the car because he had to get a ride from a friend to get home. And by the way, who called him when he was at work and then wanted to abruptly leave? I mean, so many questions. When they searched the Benton's household, did they search the basement? I know that sounds crazy, and most of you would be like, of course they most likely searched the basement. Well, I've heard of cases where the basement was not searched, if you can believe that, because the homeowners have said, oh, we don't spend any time down there. Don't worry about it. And where this all took place in Robertson County, it's actually called Cross Plain. So Cross Plain, Tennessee in 2004 had a population of 1,500 people. And now in 2024, it appears that the population is just under 2,000 people. So doesn't it seem crazy that no one has any knowledge about their disappearance? I mean, people in small towns generally are up in each other's business. And I still cannot believe that to this day, no one has come forward. So the only thing that the family can do and the police can do is keep on searching for them. It's just so important to give families closure. And this family has not once stopped searching for their loved ones. So there is a $20,000 reward offered in this case, and you can remain anonymous. Anyone with information can call the TBI at 1-800-TBI-FIND. And I really do want to do a follow-up episode to this, hopefully with Jennifer's sister, Casey Robinson, because I think we can really go down a rabbit hole and get some solid information and answers out to the public. Okay, everyone, if you like this podcast, don't forget to rate and subscribe on Apple or wherever you listen. And a big thanks to Celine Carrick as well for helping with this episode. I will be back again later this week with another episode. I'm Lauren Conlin. Thanks for listening.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.